Hello, I'm Peter Freeth. I create knowledge that helps people to achieve more in life and work, and I'm the author of more than a dozen books, including two published by Bookbin. In this interview series, I'll be speaking with a fascinating selection of guests about their contribution to today's business landscape, their personal journey, and their expert advice for your success. In this episode, I'm speaking with David James, who is learning strategist at Loop, a next generation learning platform, host of the Learning and Development podcast, and former Director of Learning, Talent and Organizational Development at the Walt Disney Company. Good morning, David.
Good morning.
David, can you tell us more about the work that you're doing around digital learning?
Yeah, sure. So the work that I do seeks to address many of the deficiencies that I faced in-house. So as well as my work at Disney, and I was there 8 years, I had 15 years of working in-house learning and development teams. And we all faced the same problem, which was unless we made e-learning mandatory, no one would go to the LMS. So like a lot of learning and development professionals, we believe that maybe it's because people didn't like learning online and preferred face-to-face. But then over the last 10 or 15 years, Google and YouTube have pretty much decimated that belief because people will go and use online solutions, often as their first port of call. But what that then suggests is that what we're doing as learning and development is wrong. So my work now seeks to address where those deficiencies lie and how we can address those. And it will come as no surprise that if you get people what they need when they need it in the context of not just their organization and not just their team, but in the distinct roles that they play within the organization and get there when people actually need the help, then the engagement is the least of your worries. But of course, it requires a rethink of the learning and development role and products in order to address that.
So you've talked there about design and delivery of learning in the organizational environment and your own experiences around that. What I'm wondering is, has easier access to learning or more availability of learning been an important aspect of your own career journey?
I can't help but say yes, Peter, but it's almost as if I need to pick you up on the semantic there, that it's not access to learning that's helped me. It's access to information, know-how, and real expert insights that has really helped me. Because like a lot of people, I'll go and find what I need when I need it, when I'm driven towards that through interest or particular tasks. And so I'm not looking for learning. I'm looking at what's going to help me get from not knowing to doing in the shortest possible time. Now, on Google, that might be a quick article. On YouTube, it might be a short video link. Now, it may be a book or it may be something else that's long form, but it's very rarely a class, much more around performance support. So I think, again, going back to what Google and YouTube have taught us over the last 10 to 15 years, and not just as platforms, but as ways of entering what it is that we need when we need it, people are pretty specific about what they need. And it's driven by a moment, by a particular and distinct interest. But when it comes down to learning and development, and because I think that it's really important to make a distinction between consumer or personal habits and the role of corporate learning. Now, in corporate learning, we are measured against what we do rather than what we know and what we learn. It's all about the application. And so in a corporate context, myself personally, I've found that Google and YouTube have helped distinctly, but at a point where learning and development has been left wanting even further.
You've mentioned some of the different ways that people are accessing learning now, individually and also in the corporate context. How do you think the majority of people out there in the workplace are engaging with digital learning right now?
So I think the majority of people are engaging in their digital efforts to become better and faster at their job and improve their prospects at their moment of need and outside of the organizational infrastructure. Elliot Mazie, in a podcast with Bob Mosier on Bob Mosier's Performance Matters podcast, described how learning and development have confused their role with publishing, which is making stuff available, whether that be e-learning or digital content, a digital content provision. But rather than publishing, we are in the enablement and equipping business, which is helping people to do what they're trying to do better and faster. So I think that, to go back to your question, I think that the majority of people will be going to Google or their web search of choice, and YouTube to find the answers, know-how, and insight they need, as well as spinning their chair around or instant messaging people in their organization with local know-how. But the LMS, to a great degree, is still barren. It's still very rare that people will go there for anything other than compliance, because in the broadcast mindset, as Elliot Macy said, in publishing, so much is broadcast as we need you to know this. And of course, that is much more akin to education, which has far different measures to corporate learning. What people are used to searching for, you and I in a personal context, is what's going to help me with what I'm trying to do now. Whereas learning and development very rarely engage in that conversation to be able to provide what it is that people actually need. So I think that we've got two streams. The outside world provides us with what we need in the context of what it is that we're trying to do, perhaps not of our organization, where corporate learning comes from, we need you to know this. And that's probably why it's not engaged with to the extent that Google and YouTube are.
And how do you see that changing in the future?
Well, it changes with the conversation, Peter. A lot of people will ask me, how do they keep up with modern technology when there are so many advances? My answer is always the same. We shouldn't be looking for the solutions. We should be engaging in conversations where we truly find out what the problems are. And rather than a training needs analysis or learning needs analysis, we need to engage in performance consulting so that we understand the root cause of a performance problem in the context in which it's actually being experienced, which is the workflow itself. Now, too often what we do in the exploration of a learning need or a training needs analysis is create a parallel path where we translate a performance need into a learning need. We then aggregate that up to common needs across an entire organization. And when it comes back down, it's as a standardized experience, whether that be as a training program or e-learning. But it's been abstracted to such an extent that people can't actually see their challenge within it. And don't get me wrong, it can be a good experience. But whether it's a useful one and a timely one is a different matter altogether. Whereas performance consulting seeks to fully understand what it is that people are trying to do, when they're trying to do that, the blockers that they're experiencing, and seek to address the actual friction they're experiencing. And now, when you are seeking to address friction at a particular point in time for a distinct audience, you can be laser focused. And rather than creating a standardized one size fits all learning program, you can create performance support, which speaks directly to people, that can be very quickly created and mobilized and address a need in real time. And the tools are there to help us these days, not in creating heavy, time-consuming and expensive learning content, but very bespoke and tailored performance content that will help us to get results via engagement. Because one thing that I found in my work, going back to your original question, is that when you help people with what it is that they're trying to do when they're trying to do it, you will definitely gain engagement. And if you can guarantee engagement, then you've got a chance of affecting performance, whereas a lot of learning technologies struggle with engagement, and therefore performance enhancement is just a pipe dream.
So thinking about what you just said about delivering learning at the point of need, and what you said earlier about connecting people and learners with experts, how do you see the corporate learning team's role in facilitating that connection between the learner and the expert?
So it goes back to my original answer, which was around performance consulting. Understand what it is that is currently being experienced. So what is actually being observed, who the main actors are within that, so we can isolate who it is that is expected to deliver the performance and any codependencies, how things are currently working and how they should be working, and then sourcing local expertise in order to address those points of friction with the local success. So what it is that people who are successful within a particular role or task are actually doing in order to get results. Now, those in the form of resources, not courses, and that's a phrase that was coined by Nick Shackleton-Jones and explored to a great extent in his book, How People Learn. In resources that are deployed as the support is actually required, then we can guide and support people to do more of the right things. And these resources may be a short article, they may be a screen recording where a local expert shows what it is that needs to be done. It could be a checklist, it could be an infographic, or it could be a video montage of headshots of people describing what it is that they've done in order to get results in a comparable situation. So it is the equivalent. And I think it's really important to state that with so much talk of digital learning technology, that what is actually being scaled is local human know-how. So what it has taken other people to be successful in the context in which the person now is expected to perform. So it is providing almost like a digital mentor and the virtual person who is in the room ready to answer those questions, but not necessarily in waiting or anticipation of a question to be asked, but anticipation of the actual need. So surface within the tools people use for work that is approximating when that support is actually required. And that can be done with either smart algorithms, not even AI, but smart algorithms, or a integration with somebody's calendar. But it can actually provide local know-how, guidance, support to alert people that this situation is likely to occur. This is the help that's required. And this isn't futuristic. Organizations such as ASOS and Sky are have got case studies on how they're actually doing this and integrating with HR systems that anticipate then what it is that people are trying to do and what support is required. And so alerting people to the value of these digital resources, which aren't educational, which aren't micro-learning around particular topics, but all designed around specific tasks in the context in which people are expected to perform, which then are measured on whether they are getting the results that are anticipated, expected, and rewarded within that organization. So it's much more focused on the workflow and the results that people are expected to get within the workflow.
And we're living through a time right now where workplaces and workforces are becoming increasingly more scattered, with greater reliance on online services to connect people. And from what you're saying, it sounds like you're seeing learning as being more integrated with other business activities, as opposed to being a separate activity within the workplace in terms of classroom and traditional learning, as you've put it. What effect do you think this increased move towards distributed workforces and workplaces, what is the impact on that? I'm going to start that question again.
Yeah, sure.
We're living through a time where workplaces and workforces are becoming increasingly more scattered, more distributed, with greater reliance on online services. And you've talked about how learning is more integrated with business activities at the point of need, as opposed to being a separate activity like a traditional classroom training. How do you think this greater geographic distribution and global distribution of a workforce relates to what you're saying about changes in learning delivery?
So what you're describing there, Peter, may be deemed as scary. I think this is the biggest and best opportunity that learning and development can face, because we've been fooled into thinking that having somebody in a room and seeing them get a concept is actually learning, in the same way as we had chosen not just engagement but completion as a key indicator of learning when it comes to e-learning as well, whereas neither are an indicator of learning. It's simply presence and exposure. What we are required to do now is to fully understand what it is that people are trying to do. And there's an added layer of complexity, because management of remote workforces requires more sophistication beyond presenteeism as well. So in this new world, how do managers make sure that the work is done in the way that is expected and rewarded within the context of any given organization? If we can fully understand that and the challenges that people are experiencing by working remotely or more disparate workforces, then learning and development can be more laser focused in equipping people with what it is that they need in order to, first of all, understand the culture in which they perform. Because I think what we will be recognizing to an even greater extent now is that if people can't see each other, how do they get to understand the cultural norms and practices within an organization, specifically when it comes not just to communication, but influencing others? Because all organizations are so different And of course, it's the nuance that makes it different rather than any explicitly stated cultural norms and practices. So what is it that learning and development can do to open this up and make it accessible for people? There's language that needs to be unpicked so that people can fully understand. But what it really comes down to, Peter, and what is absolutely critical is what I mentioned earlier around performance consulting. It's understanding what it is that people are trying to do and then what they're not able to do efficiently that needs to be addressed. Now, data is our friend in this as well, because all we're talking about here is the evidence part of data and evidence-based practice, which isn't new to HR or learning and development, but something that is becoming even more prominent. Data in terms of understanding critical points of failure in any organization, and all I mean there is when things aren't working to the extent or how they are expected to work. And we're not talking about HR, people practices, or learning. We're talking about within any given operation or a silo within an organization. So your data will alert you to where things aren't working and need attention. And the evidence-based practice is understanding what people are trying to do to affect that data. Now, whether that be service level agreements, whether that be customer service, whether that be as obvious as sales, whatever a function or a set of roles is measured on in terms of his success, that's what we should be trying to affect. So the evidence-based practice is trying to understand the human element, how that's being experienced, and then an experiment run to see to what extent learning and development can be involved in order to move the needle. Equipping people with resources, there may be an element of education, there could be, and is likely to be, an element or a series of conversations that can help to move the needle, but it is all in service of the data and the evidence base in which we're seeking to perform. So that's how I see things changing, not just in this new world, but I see that this new world is accelerating what was already starting to happen anyway. As I said, it's not a new stream, data and evidence-based practice, but I think it's something that we'll need to accelerate in order to measure ourselves on more than just engagement and completion and much more towards efficacy.
And what simple tips could you offer for anyone who wants to increase engagement and effectiveness in digital learning?
So there's no trick to increasing engagement in digital learning. In the past, what we've tried to do is make things more appealing. We have misinterpreted the engagement problem, so people aren't engaging, with make it more engaging. So creates interactivity with drop boxes and reveal boxes, which in my mind are facile and don't seek to address the real problem. Trying to turn things into games when people are trying to work, or leaderboards, trying to set people off against each other. These are massive distractions and stop us from understanding what it really takes to increase engagement is the right stuff at the right time in service of what people are really concerned about. So my tips are, number one, solve real problems. If there's no data to back up that there's a real problem, it's unlikely that there's a real problem. So data's your friend. Try to understand what real problems are. Use data and evidence-based practice in order to fully understand them. So not just data, but performance consulting to have the right conversations. Number two, I'd say experiment. Stop running large-scale programs or trying to gain support for heavy or lengthy programs. Try to do as little as you can. There's a wonderful book called Essentialism in which there's a phrase that says we need to try to make the minimum valuable progress. And I think that that's what we should be doing. Instead of heavy top-down initiatives that try to address perceived or assumed problems, by experimenting to address real problems that we have baseline data for will help us to achieve what we're trying to achieve. Again, this is still the engagement problem, but when it comes to actually doing digital learning that makes a difference, we should only scale what works. So we're trying to solve a real problem, we've experimented and we are moving the needle, we've gained traction and we're starting to get results. We should only scale then what is deemed to work, and therefore we are not wasting or being frivolous with people's attention and our own credibility by coming top down. We've got to almost reframe our value in organizations from being those publishers that I mentioned earlier that Elia Maisie described us as, to digital product owners. And that's a level of sophistication, and that has years of experience in product development and software development, in understanding what it is that people are trying to do, to live and die by our engagement, but to think and to expect more from ourselves and actually deliver some results.
And David, where can listeners find out more about you and your work?
So, as you mentioned in your introduction, Peter, I have a podcast called the Learning and Development Podcast, in which I invite practitioners on who are already doing a lot of this stuff. So they're providing not just insights and opinion, but their experience as well. I've also got a blog, which you'll be able to find on my website, which is loop.co. That's loop with three O's.co. And there's a lot of thinking and, again, experience on there of how digital learning in itself, we should expect a hell of a lot more from digital learning, but how we can actually do this in order to get some results. And people can also contact me on Twitter. I'm at David in Learning.
David, it's been absolutely fascinating speaking with you today. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Peter.
Okay, how was that, Matthew?
Thank you, guys. That was great. Sounded really good.
That worked. Right.
Yeah, fascinating, David. Really enjoyed it.
Right.
The time went fast.
It did go fast. It was a really good conversation. Thanks.
Yeah,
I really enjoyed
it. Absolutely.
Yeah, really interesting. And it was nice that your answers were quite succinct, so I was able to fit a couple more interesting questions in. So, very good. Thank you.
Wonderful. Good stuff. So I'll do a WeTransfer, Matthew, and I'll send this file. I'll send it to both of you, and then you've both got access to it. Sure. And then will you follow up, Matthew, on timings for this? And I mean, would it be helpful if I did a share as well to promote it?
Yes. Yeah, I'll let you know all the relevant information when we go live with this.
Brilliant. Good
all
stuff.
Right, fantastic.
Thank you very much.
Great. Yeah, thank you
Super.
So much.
David. Yeah, thank you again, David.
We'll talk to you later.
You're very welcome.
Matthew, do you just want to stay on the line for a moment, Matthew?
Yeah, no problem. Yeah.
Wonderful. All right. Thanks then, guys.
So long, David.
Thanks,
thank
David.
You.
Okay, great. You happy with that, Miffy?
Yes, very happy. Went good.